The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast by Fresh FM, with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to the Sato Karate On Air Dojo, your community karate club that has been part of the Nelson and the Top of the South for 50 years. Introducing hundreds of people to the benefits of Sato Karate through dojos located in Nelson, Stoke, Richmond, Motueka, Blenheim, and beyond. My name's Eric, and in our on-air dojo, I'll be talking with the people that have helped make it such a remarkable place to learn Sato Karate. Brought to you by Nelson City Taxis. Today it is my privilege to be speaking with Kiyoshi Graham Ironside, a very experienced Sato Karate contact fighter and teacher. Kiyoshi Graham started his martial arts career in Taekwondo, then moved across to Sato Karate, first in Auckland, then under Eiko Hanchi Renzi at the Christchurch Shibu. Kiyoshi Graham represented New Zealand Sato at the 1996 World Sato Karate Tournament in New York, where he won the heavyweight black belt contact sparring title. And since then, he went on to win numerous Sato Karate sparring titles in New Zealand. He's also competed in Kyokushin Open tournaments in New Zealand, England, and Russia. Warm welcome to you, Kiyoshi Graham.
Thank you, Eric. Nice to be here.
And also a very warm welcome to the Nelson Shibu head instructor, Seishan Aaron Barber.
Os Kiyoshi, and os Eric.
Os, welcome, and great to have you here. Kiyoshi Graham, so what got you interested in martial arts to begin with all those years ago?
I used to get bullied when I first started high school. I think I was at high school for a year before I started training in Taekwondo. But I played rugby, rugby league, football, cricket, so I was quite competitive. Played cricket and rugby league for club and school at some times. And when I first started Taekwondo, my head instructor, Ron Clark, he really pushed me to train really hard. I was really fit. I did a milk run, pushing like 6 crates of milk around for 3 hours. I did that at least two or three times a week, sometimes 4. So I was really fit. So when I first started Taekwondo, he didn't really need to concentrate on
your fitness.
Getting me fit. Yeah, so I was always fit. I guess I was young and reasonably flexible, so it kind of came pretty naturally. And just that competitive kind of feeling that I'd had from doing other sports led into that. And yeah, it got me into tournaments.
And so how did you shift into Sato Karate?
Did Taekwondo for about 5 years, won a couple of national tournaments, like 16, 17, beating an adults contact committee. And yes. Then 1988, we went to a big international tournament in Australia, bicentennial year for Australia. I fought in the heavyweight in that one, although I wasn't a heavyweight at that stage. I was only 76 kgs, so quite a while ago, not that anymore. But we could only have one competitor in each weight division. We had 2 in my weight division, so I went in the heavyweight because I'd had more recent experience in tournaments, and I got 2nd in that. And then they had just switched then to the Olympic style Taekwondo, which I didn't really like. I kind of stuck at it for a while longer, and I think it was about 6 months between stopping doing Taekwondo that Seishan Danny Watson started a dojo in Devonport, my hometown.
Yep.
And I signed up with him and started training in Sato.
Wow. And so the experience of transitioning across from Taekwondo to Sato Karate, did that come naturally? That came easily?
Yeah, really, really naturally and easily. So when I first started Taekwondo, it was quite traditional and the class structures were more like Sato. So you'd start with a warm-up and basic technique and then do some line work, then do kata, then kumite. So it was really easy to transition over. And that would have really been missing in Taekwondo when they changed to the sports style. So it had that traditional etiquette and standards when I first started. But the more we went on, the more it kind of became like a sport and there was less like respect and etiquette shown. So when I started Sato, it was really good because it was like, what's all this? And then when I first started, we didn't even know that we had to we were just calling Seishan Danny, we were just calling him Danny. He was Senpai Danny back then. But because we had no seniors in the class, we kind of didn't know. And then we would occasionally go to the Auckland City Dojo and do gradings or trainings there. And then it was all or Senpai or Sensei and all this. And we were like, oh, okay. Yeah. And we were like kind of embarrassed that we hadn't been doing it already. Yeah.
I can imagine, because that's the honorifics and bowing and the providing of respect. It's sort of is the bedrock, I would say, of certainly my experience in Sato Karate, because of the fact that it is a martial art. So you're learning these techniques, but there is a responsibility that comes with that, and that is reflected through your use of etiquette and through your use of being respectful to everyone who's in the dojo.
Yeah, it's what differentiates us from being a sport, or most martial arts from being a sport, is the etiquette and tradition.
Yeah.
So once you take that away, well, you may as well be doing another sport.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I think it's really important, showing respect to the people that are gone before you. And if we lose that, you know, if you lose the respect for the people above you and below you, if you're teaching, then, yeah, you may as well just stop. It's not going to work if you don't have respect for people.
No.
In the dojo.
No. So your experiences then learning in Devonport and then under Eiko Hanchirinzi in Christchurch. So what was some of those experiences like in Sato? What was something that you recall when you think of those times?
When I was in Devonport, we had, at one stage, we had like over 100 members in the dojo.
Gosh.
That included a lot of children. I'd say like at that stage, probably half of the children in the local area probably went through the dojo at some stage. So it was really good energy and classes. So there's always like 20 odd people in an adults class. It's really good training. We trained really hard. I was very young, so it was easy to train hard. Well, a lot easier than now. Yeah. So I did my first Sato tournaments when I was in Devonport. Best one was as a white belt, 1990 in Christchurch, about 6 months after started training with Xiao and Danny. I got first in white belt Shiai and third in Kata. Then we would come down here to Nelson to do the tournaments under Eiko Hanchi Andy. I think I got a second or third brown belt points committee. Never used to get anywhere in Carter down here because they're too good. And I just treated points as a game and had fun.
Yeah.
So yeah, I didn't care if I lost or didn't get anywhere.
Mm.
It was just good to get down here and meet new people, especially, and then made a lot of friends down here. Yeah, did my first Sato contact tournament from Devonport with Seishan Danny, 1994 international tournament in Christchurch. Got first in brown belt Kumite.
So how was that like, competing sort of at that level and getting first in brown belt Kumite? Do you remember some of those early fights?
Yep.
You remember them still?
Oh yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. The old saying, you know, everyone's got a game plan until you get punched in the face.
Yes. Yeah, I'll remember that saying. It's quite good.
It's very true.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I remember, actually, I think it was 4 or 5 fights to the final in that tournament, and I can still remember all of them. So I fought one of my best mates from Sato, from my dojo, in the final, which was quite good because we both just wanted to go hard, and so that was really good. We didn't mind fighting each other. We'd fought each other heaps. So
yeah.
But it had been, you know, 7 years since I'd done a tournament, Kumite tournament. So it was quite different getting out there.
Yeah. So what were some of the differences that you noticed?
Not a lot, really. So Taekwondo, well, that's probably the biggest thing, is no body shield. So in Taekwondo, you wear a body shield. You're allowed to, in the old traditional style, you're allowed to kick and punch as hard as you like to the body. You kick to the head. Same as Sato, you couldn't punch to the head. No low kicks. So it was similar fighting, but I was still keeping really fit. I was playing rugby as well, and I did a season of American football. I think it was the year after that, when I got my shodan, and then started training for the world tournament in 96. So I did that at Devonport Dojo. So that was, eye-opening.
So lift a little bit on what it's like to not only go to a world tournament in New York, but then also compete, but then also win a heavyweight sparring title. Share some of those experiences, if you could, please.
First time to New York. It's only my second time overseas. Huge jet lag when I got there. Yeah, very different, very noisy. Stayed in the YMCA, locked myself out of my room about 5 times because... had to go down the hall to the communal toilets and showers, and I'd leave my key in my room, so I'd have to go downstairs to the lobby with a towel wrapped around me to get someone to open the door for me, which was quite embarrassing. That was all good. It gave me a laugh and a chuckle. So the tournament, I was massive, quite nervous, watching all these people come in at the start, the greeting at Hombu, all the different international people there, wondering who's in my weight division, trying to scope them out.
Yeah.
get the psychological shit going early. So the tournament, I was qualified for kata as well, but I didn't get anywhere in kata.
How many fights was it, Kish, for that before the final?
Three before the final.
Nice.
So I fought a guy from India first, and I think he thought it was going to be points.
Yeah.
Because I just barreled him out of the ring like five or six times.
Yeah.
And Kaicho was actually watching, and he stepped in and said, no, finished the disqualified for retreating out of the ring. The next one I fought Kyoshi, now Kerry Evans. He's a Kiwi. He was training in London. That was the first time I met him. So we had a good fight, and I just came out on top. Then the next third fight, the quarterfinals, was funny. There were, in my weight division, there were two Americans and two Kiwis.
Yeah.
And we fought each other. The Americans fought each other and the Kiwis fought each other. Kaicho said so that we'd have an international final. So I fought my mate from Christchurch, Lee Heslop, in the quarterfinal. And we had a draw in the first 3 minutes. And then I knew I'd win after that because I was super, super fit. And so I just took it and in the extension just went hard out and got the win over him.
Nice.
And the final was next day. So it's quite challenging doing that. Used to doing a tournament all in one day. So the night between is quite psychological.
Yes.
Going through your head, you don't sleep much. And then the finals are like really late in the afternoon, and it was the last fight. So men's heavyweight was the last fight. So I'm like in this like green room at the Lincoln Center for like 3 hours, just like trying to warm up and or stay warm and flexible and running up and down stairs and stuff, just so I didn't think too much.
Yeah.
But well, I had a feeling I was going to win beforehand because backstage before we went on, Sean William Oliver, his student, was with him. I was fighting in the final, Paul Bison, and I could tell they were like freaking out way more than me and Sean Danny.
Nice.
We were like quite relaxed, and he was just like, oh yeah, just another day at the office, let's do this. And I was like, oh shit, he was sensei then, and when they were talking to each other, they were like really quiet and kind of, different story when we're out in the ring. Mm. He was like a big guy, a little bit taller than me, maybe a little bit heavier, but not too much.
Nice.
So we had a really good fight, almost got disqualified.
What were you doing? What'd you do?
Put them in the jaw with a punch, that was after he'd hit me three times. And so the corner referees were all inexperienced judges, and so they didn't pick it when he was hitting me. And then when I clipped him, it came off his glove because he had his hands down and he brought them up, and my punch rode up off his glove. So they were going to disqualify me there, not give me a warning or anything. But Kaicho came out in the ring and said, heavyweights, there's nothing. Heavyweight must be a good to be disqualified.
Yeah.
So I was like, I thought I had it over him in that first 3 minutes, but they obviously took that punch into consideration, the judges and referee. So we had an extension, and once again I knew, because he was getting tired.
Yeah.
And I was ready to go.
Mm.
I knew when they called an extension, I knew I'd have it. So
yeah.
Same thing, just went hard out.
And did you see, because they often talk when you're sparring, people have their go-tos, right? They have the things that they feel that they are most confident in.
Yep.
And it's the thing that sort of keeps on happening all the time. And one of the things for me, I know, is I have to sort of unlearn or stretch myself to use other things. Otherwise, you get read like a book. And so how did you find that when you were competing at these tournaments? Could you sort of watch people and go, oh, yep, that's their first, that's their second, that's their third go?
Yeah, some of the Kyokushin tournaments I've been in, it's really hard to watch the fights when they're going on, because most of the fighters are out the back, so you're on a stage and you can't really go out into the audience area unless you be a bit sneaky.
Yeah.
And you don't know when your fight's going to be, so you're out there trying to stay ready.
Nice.
But most of the Sato tournaments, you can see what's going on the day. So, yeah, you can have a look and see what their strengths and weaknesses are. Nice. And work out a strategy.
Yeah.
But for my game plan was just having combinations.
Mm.
So I used to use a lot of combinations. And as soon as that combination stopped working, I'd either change the arrangement of the combination.
Nice.
Do a new one or add a new technique into the same combination.
Nice.
So once someone's mind picks up on your pattern, so your human mind's always looking to connect patterns together.
Nice.
And once someone's learned your combination, you have to change it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you either add something to it, take something off it, or switch the order of the technique.
So in your experience then, what's the ideal number when it comes to combinations? Because I've heard, people, they go for the minimum is 3. They'll do 1, 2, 3 and then sort of sit back and go, right, it's now your turn.
Yeah.
Whereas the more combinations you can string together, the more you're likely to catch your opponent off guard. Where do you sort of see that as the ideal?
In competition, minimum 2, obviously. Single technique's not a combination. And maximum of 4. Any more and your opponent's going to have moved or thrown a technique and you're not going to get the rest of that combination off. In order.
Yeah.
So in training, when you're training for a tournament, you can do however many you like.
Yeah.
Especially on some bags and shields and stuff, do however many you want to just for training. Practicing technique and you're getting fitter. But competing wise, yeah, no more than 4. Otherwise, your partner's either moved off or, you've missed one of them or they've thrown a technique and broken your rhythm.
Nice. Yeah, no, that's really interesting because I imagine, people who are listening and either already sparring or thinking about sparring, they're grading up to green belt or they're considering the tournament or practicing for the tournament will be going, right, well, what number should we work to?
Yeah, it's fine in training,
but
competition, you very rarely even get the 4.
Nice.
Yeah, unless your opponent's really tired or you got them psyched out and they freeze like a deer in the headlights occasionally. Then you might get more.
I think that's the beauty that Kyosh is doing with us in the Nelson Dojo with our contact stuff, is we're putting the students in that heat of the bit of heat on the in the battle. So then we talk about the combinations they may throw or not throw or what they're going back to, and putting them under that pressure and making them change their habits. Kyoshi does that really well.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Trying hard. I haven't been here that long, but I've seen some of the students really pick it up and take it on board.
Yes.
So that's really gratifying as a teacher.
Yeah. Well, it was wonderful having you here for the workshop. A couple of months back. That was a really informative and enjoyable experience. It was really, really enjoyable. And part of that was your approach, from my perspective, is a relaxed approach in that don't be bunched up and come out, you need to relax into it. And that sort of flows through, from my experience, the learnings. And that makes it easier, I think, for people to pick things up.
Yeah, I've been actually teaching for a long time. I used to teach kids' classes in Taekwondo when I was like 15. Started teaching karate as a senior green belt. Sashian Danny had moved to Christchurch for a year to do a radio contract.
Nice.
So he left the seniors in the dojo to take the majority of the classes, and then some of the black belts from the city dojo would come over and help out, take brown belt classes and green belt classes. Yeah, so that was quite interesting.
So what was your experience when you first then started teaching?
I'm sure I was terrible and very nervous starting as a 15-year-old, but I've got instructors, so I just kind of copied what they did to begin with. And then probably as a shodan, I started teaching kumite class, sparring class at Devonport, and that really helped with my competition karate as well, because I had to concentrate on what the students were doing and often see my own mistakes or shortcomings in the students. And then so every time I was giving feedback to the students, I was trying to think, that's what I do as well. That's maybe why they do it. And I've got to fix that as well. So I'm not passing it on to the next generation of karateka. Yeah.
So as a teacher, you're still learning.
Oh, yeah. And, my last karate tournament, Okumite tournament was in, I think, 2006 in Wellington.
Yeah.
But I really hadn't come, and that, yeah, that was just my students begging me to kind of compete. So I hadn't done a karate tournament since 2001. So it'd been 5 years.
Yeah.
And I'd only been back in New Zealand for a couple of years and teaching at the Devonport Dojo. So, yeah, it was quite interesting. But, yeah, I think, yeah, from Shodan, I kind of got a lot better at teaching.
Mm.
So my teacher, Seishan Danny, he had a great teaching style, which I probably took on, relaxed, but no let up on the etiquette and discipline.
Nice.
But, yeah, try to make the class enjoyable.
Nice.
If people don't enjoy it, you know, there's a certain select amount of people, myself included, that just like to be ground into the ground and thrashed. But a lot of people don't like that. So
no.
You have to make it enjoyable for everyone and then pick the ones you can see that need some extra work.
Nice.
And encourage them to do a little bit more.
Nice.
Yeah. So, yeah, very relaxed. I used to get worried about, what am I going to do in class? Or what am I going to teach? And normally I don't have a class plan. I hardly ever do. Nice. I might have a couple of thoughts in my head, but as soon as you start the class, you know, you can see someone struggling with something, some technique or combination. So then you've got to concentrate on that for a little while.
Nice.
And the class kind of takes care of itself. You don't have to come up with a game plan and, you know, a list of things you want to go through, because most of the time if you do, you know, you get one or two of them off your list, and then all the other stuff that you notice in the class takes up the rest of the class.
Nice.
And then you kind of go home a bit dissatisfied with not having finished your list.
Nice.
So, yeah, it's just about taking care of the students' needs, what they need at that time.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've been training here and training all over, but and in England as well?
Yeah, I lived in London for 3 years from the end of 2000 to the start of 2004, and then I went back for about a year in 2006. So the London Dojo asked me to come over to go to Poland with them when the Polish people joined SATO.
Right.
So I went over for that. That was really nice. But yeah, London was great. I had two great teachers there, Kyoshi Kiri and Kyoshi John Esposito, Kyoshi Kiri Evans. So they gave me their kind of psychological philosophies on karate.
Us.
Especially about kumite. So kumite is not about kicking and punching and throwing each other around. It's about putting the techniques you've learned into practice and under pressure.
Nice.
So that's how I try to explain it to people if they're having a hard time with kumite.
Nice.
Just think about it, that all the stuff you've been doing up till your start in kumite has been preparing you for this. So in Sato, we only start sparring at green belt. So it might be like 2 or 3 years that people have been training, doing these techniques.
Nice.
And not actually making contact with anyone.
Mm.
So it's about learning which of your techniques work, or if they work, and then applying pressure and seeing how you handle the pressure.
Mm.
Yeah. And if you keep your cool, if you back off and cower, or if you get aggro and angry about someone hitting you, it's just they're doing the same thing as you are, and it's just learning how people react.
Us.
To being under pressure and the pressure that you're putting on them.
Us.
Yeah,
because that is quite a different experience, because it's in some respects a strange experience.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, it's very unnatural for most people.
Us.
And one of the things I always talk about in class is to try and relax, and that's kind of counterintuitive to most people's approach to someone punching or kicking them.
Us.
Is not to relax.
No.
So you have to, yeah, it's one of the hardest things to actually learn for kumite is to relax while you're doing it.
Yeah. It's certainly one of the learnings that I have, I'm still working through, is just learning to relax with someone's,
yeah,
you know.
I think we all do it to some degree, you know, as you get more experienced, it's less and less, but I think it's still always there.
Mm.
Yeah.
And the more you do it, the more you have the opportunity to learn to relax.
Yeah. Yeah. If you stop at the first hurdle,
yeah,
you know, and you think, oh, I can't do this, I'm never going to be able to do this, I hate it, then yeah, you never will.
That's right.
But if you go along next week, next week, next week, it soon becomes more natural.
Yes.
Yeah. But that's probably one of the things, I don't know, that I see in the world these days, is lack of discipline and drive and the ability to stick at something, even if it's difficult, even if you don't like it. And that's one of the biggest things with students, is seeing them them get through that experience and come out the other side, and they've learnt to deal with that and they can keep going.
Yeah, that's
really satisfying.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I couldn't agree more. One thing that I thoroughly enjoy is learning to be resilient and to just weather the storm, you know, whether it's the challenge of your own fitness level or the challenge of being with someone who's sparring and they just happen to be taller than you are and have longer reach than you are. How do you respond to that? And it's the resilience, I find, which is a great learning that I take away about, yep, they got a couple of hits in and okay, well, that's a learning to, you know, hold my guard up or, you know, be a bit better with my punches or whatever. And it's a learning that you take away that allows you to be more resilient and come back next time.
Yeah. So in Sato Karate, we call it a non-quitting attitude, which particularly Aiko Hanchi, Andy used to talk about a lot.
Yeah.
So one of the coincidences with winning the world tournament was my favorite karate maxim was Nana Karobi Aoki, get knocked down 7 times, stand up 8.
Yeah.
And when they gave out the medals, that was inscribed on the back of the medals. So, yeah, it'd been my favorite karate saying for a long time before that, and it was just one of the coincidences that I found.
That's inspirational, that one. And I remember Aiko Hanchi Andy, you know, saying in the classes, in the dojo, you know, never quit, you know, and you'd be doing your push-ups or holding in a push-up position and just try and keep it for just that bit longer, you know, and you had that voice ringing in your head.
Don't go down.
Yeah, very much so. Now, you've been really successful, and so you, in terms of your sparring, in terms of what you've achieved in Sato Karate, you've been all over the world with it. So what continues to inspire you now that, you know, you've done all these things with Sato? You know, you come back and you're training and you're teaching still.
That's it, teaching.
Teaching inspires you.
Yeah, the students inspire me, when I'm teaching. So with my injury or illness, I had COVID and everything, I hadn't trained for, I'd done like 2 classes in Blenheim and one black belt class with like a Hunchy Andy when I was living in Havelock, but that was all the training I'd done in like 4 years. So when I was in hospital, so Sean Aaron came in to see me and asked me if I'd help out with the tournament. So the first thing I did was the camp.
Nice.
Took a session there, helped out by Sensei Troy Ballantyne and Sensei Paul Hopkinson from Christchurch. They'd come up and they took a grappling session as well, but I've known them for many, many years, so they helped me out with my class as well. But yeah, teaching, watching people improve, watching people pick stuff up that you're teaching is really, that's just as rewarding as the accolades and stuff for doing competitions. So when I stopped doing competitions, that was I started teaching more seriously, I found that just as satisfying. Especially when you're sparring with someone and they land your combination you've taught them on you. So I go, yes, that was really good. Better than I do it. So that kind of inspires me and helps me keep going along. And just have to thank Sashia and Aaron for getting me back in the dojo.
Nice.
A couple of dark years there in hospital for about 4 months last year and being bedridden for like 8 months.
Nice.
9 months, couldn't even, needed help to get out of bed, go to the toilet, stuff like that. So after being such an active sort of person, that was pretty hard. But being back in the Sato Karate community is helping me. So,
So how did you manage through that challenge of, you know, losing?
So for people who don't know, I lost my left foot to diabetes last year. I lost 2 toes to begin with, but then I got another infection and it spread into more bones. So I made a hard decision to take the foot off rather than repeating that same process over and over again. Mentally, I would have handled it, but it would have been really difficult to keep going back into hospital over and over again. So I think I made the right decision. It wasn't an easy one.
No.
It's a pretty sleepless weekend trying to, I knew I was going to do it, but it was just convincing myself in the end. But yep, now I'm back on my feet, walking around with my one foot and my prosthetic foot.
That's
come a long way. So I'm really a lot more active and it's good being back on my feet.
That's
made me feel tall again.
Yes.
Rather than being in a wheelchair, I felt like a short ass. Yeah. And now I'm feel normal again and get in even more kind of active and throw more techniques at the classes.
Nice.
So it's, yeah, been difficult, but I just think, say to non-quitting attitude and nice. How many people have gone through this before me and they're nice. Fine and they're thriving. So if they can do it, I can do it.
Nice.
And that's, I think, the kind of attitude you need for most difficulties in life.
Yes. Yeah, absolute. Yes. Absolute. Yeah, no, and it's like I've said before, you know, it's wonderful to have you there as a teacher because you've got such a vast amount of experience and you have such a warm and encouraging approach to teaching that I think what could be a very challenging thing to learn is made much smoother and much more acceptable to a lot of people, I think, in terms of coming to terms with sparring and you being able to share that collective experience over years is, I think, a wonderful asset to the dojo. And so greatly appreciative of your teaching.
Kish's, and we've talked about it before, is that he's had so much success in tournaments, but you would never know, being so humble. You know, you'd never know that he had so much success. And I think that's one of the things that's really attractive to students and me personally is that he's a man that's had all success, gone through a bit of adversity, but you wouldn't know. He just turns up,
nice.
Humble, carries on, makes no excuses. Next day, let's bring it on.
Absolutely. No, that's wonderful.
Inspiring.
Yes. Absolutely, that is. And so, of course, we have a tournament coming up next month now. It's coming up fast, and I understand that you've entered into the tournament as well.
I have. I'm going to do an empty hand kata and a bow kata, weapons kata in the over 50s masters section.
Fantastic, yeah. And I'll be competing there as well, also in the kata section, actually also in the masters section, although it'll be in a brown belt, but we'll be there encouraging each other. I am definitely. I have no doubt.
Good on you.
But no, that's wonderful that you'll be competing there as well. And that's one of the things in Sato as well. Age is no barrier. Ability is no barrier. What's the barrier is the willpower to step up and give it a go.
Yeah.
Nice.
So I kind of entered as a challenge or an incentive maybe for other people who are in the over 50s kind of age group and maybe haven't done a tournament in a long time. Yeah. So if I can get out there and hobble around on one foot, one real foot and one fake foot, most people can certainly try and have a go.
Absolutely.
And make this a really great event. So it's the first international tournament we've had for quite a while.
Yes.
So it'd be good to get as many people competing as possible, make the over 50s a really competitive section.
Absolutely. And the more the merrier. So for everyone listening, you know, if you're going to be competing, you're going to be part of a pretty amazing and memorable day. You're going to have some remarkable experiences and compete with some remarkable people as well. Now, Friday night sessions, this is where it's at, and this is where we do our polishing, is that right?
Yep, so I've been taking Friday night since March.
After campus.
Yep. So been going really well. So Shion take fitness class, and then I take the Kumite class after that.
Nice.
So everybody's warmed up already, which is great. I don't have to do that. So we hit some shields and mitts and stuff and do some drills and do some contact fighting at the end.
Us.
And the people that have been coming along, improvement is great. Yep. Us. So compared to when I first started teaching, everybody's listened and taken stuff on board and, yeah, really progressing. Like even every week, you know, I'll notice something different in most students.
Us.
They're either they've just got that little bit fitter and they can spar hard for that little bit longer, or they've improved a technique or a combination and it's starting to work for them. Yeah, it's really satisfying.
Nice. So as we sort of come to the end of the interview here today, what are some sort of last words if you were sort of talking to those people who have put their hands up to spar or who haven't put their hands up to spar in the tournament but are wanting to develop their ability to spar, to be better in that field? What are some words of advice and encouragement you might offer?
Find a good teacher. That's the first thing. So a lot of the stuff I used to use, I got from watching a lot of kickboxing, Thai boxing, K1, UFC, just like all the time watching stuff like that, going to tournaments, competing, watching people fight, after the fight, noticing what they'd done to me, what worked, what didn't work, trying to use it for myself and see if it would work or not. So I learned a lot from Sensei Mike Cope, who lives in Australia now, doesn't do karate anymore. Sensei Troy Ballantyne in Christchurch. Obviously, Seishan Danny Watson, Nico Hanchi Renzi when I trained there.
Nice.
Nico Hanchi, Andy, whenever I was in Nelson, always got a little nugget from him somewhere. I remember coming down in the early 90s doing points tournaments here, watching Nico Hanchi, Andy, and Seishan Aaron do demonstrations. And Seishan Stephen. Stephen Lomax from
Stoke Dojo.
Yeah. So they were really, like, they, I'd seen first sort of real demonstrations at this Taekwondo tournament in Australia. Then the 1990 Sato tournament had really big, cool demonstrations. And then I'd come to the tournaments here, and it was, I think it was the first time I'd seen Nico Hanchi wearing the kendo
armor.
That was really cool because they'd actually give each other a good whack with Sai or Bo or Joe. Yeah, really good. One of the really great sayings on it for Nico Hanchi, Andy, was Seika Tandem, strong center, which is like really important for all karate, but particularly Kumite. And Kumite, you have to have your core clenched, but still be able to breathe and relax and move all your limbs. So that was a really good one that I learned from him. So watch as much martial arts as you can, learn combinations, watch how the different techniques are done. Really be a sponge, so karate camps are great for that. You get taught by all these different instructors, and if you don't learn anything at a karate camp, you must have had your head screwed on backwards or something, because there was the times that I learnt the most were at karate camp. Like, you'd just, one of your yakusuka kumites or something, they'd show you just a slightly different way, or just watch and see how they did it, and it was like, that works, and go back to your own dojo and try it and see that it worked, and then, and you'd get something off most instructors, I found. Well, I did.
Absolutely. I still have some great memories from the camps and learn a lot. Over that short time, it just, everything is amplified, and that includes the learnings that you take away. So when you don't miss an opportunity to come to a Sato karate camp, you will not be disappointed. And if you come along to sparring on a Friday night, you too have the opportunity to learn from a great teacher, and it has been an absolute privilege, Kiyoshi Graham, to be able to interview you this afternoon, and look forward to seeing you this evening. And Seishan Aaron, wonderful to have you here as well.
Awesome. Thank you, Eric, and thank Kiyoshi for coming along and spending the time.
My pleasure.
Yeah, see you at training.
Give out the dates for the tournament or anything? Or?
I'll let Eric do that.
So we have the tournament coming up on October 26th and 27th October. If you're not competing, then it's going to be the hottest ticket in town to come and watch. You will be amazed at the skill of people, not just in Nelson, not just in the top of the South or in New Zealand, but from around the world, who are coming here to demonstrate and be part of what is going to be a remarkable tournament that honours 50 years of the Nelson Dojo, and honours also, of course, Nico Hanchi, Andy Barber, for the incredible legacy that he has left and paved, that now Seishan Aaron has taken up the helm.
With pleasure.
So thank you again. And we'll see you in class. If you're interested in finding out more about Sato Karate, then you can check us out on Facebook. With dojos throughout the region, there's bound to be one near you. See you next time at the Sato Karate On Air Dojo. Us.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM, with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.